College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Nagandi.
Coming up, we've got a great podcast for you. Chris Felica, the Bear, joining us. His game day experience, the pressure he puts on himself to make picks on his big board. It's a lot. His favorite place to eat. He didn't waste any time telling us.
That was easy.
And he's definitely not eating with Pollock. And the most memorable game day shows in his career. And there are a couple of them I'm sure our listeners would remember as well. The guy you hear in the background is David Pollock, who of course is a part of game day. His game day is on the road this weekend in Waco, getting ready for a huge game in the Big 12. Baylor hosting Oklahoma on ABC Saturday night. And before we go further, I want to bring one thing up with you. You are a guy that takes some pride in himself. And Wednesday we talked about you wearing wool socks. I could not believe that in Tuscaloosa, next to Dez on the set, and I think the previous week it was in Memphis, next to Dez on the set. Dez is a guy who wears a jacket or a scarf, and he's bundled up if it drops below 50 degrees. But here he is out there just in his suit both weekends, and you're the only guy on the set in a jacket. What is up with that on those experiences in Memphis and in Tuscaloosa? You're wearing a jacket on game day, Pollock? Come on.
Well, first of all, game day has been even Tuscaloosa was very cold this past weekend.
What's very cold?
It was 20-something degrees.
No, it wasn't.
It was 30-something degrees in the morning, I promise you.
Okay.
20-something, 30-something degrees. But here's the difference, too. So I go out there early and do a sports center. And then I do the Twitter show beforehand. Well, they're on the desk. By the way, don't think we're tough. The desk has three or four heaters above us and below us. So when you're on that desk, you're actually roasting. Okay. You get really hot. But when you're somebody like me, I'm not a part of the show all the time. So I'm on the side segment and then I'm not on and I'm just sitting off to the side. So it gets kind of cold off to the side when you're off to there and not underneath the heaters. If I was underneath the heater.
But take your jacket off when you're on the set then, right? Take your jacket off.
Well, I'm still cold from being off the set.
Oh.
And I come on. And so I'm still warming up. But hey, listen, man, you can shame me all you want. I don't give a crap. I'm warm. I'm good. It don't bother me at all. It doesn't bother me in the slightest. I don't care how I look. I'm not like Dez and Kirk and Reese where they love their suits and stuff. I don't give a rip. I'm a defensive lineman, bro. I've had my hand in the dirt. Like I roll around in the mud. That's what I am.
Well, so you don't care. So who's picking out the suits here? Is this your wife? God bless
her.
My
wife picks out my suits every week. I have no clue what I'm wearing until I get to where I'm going. Not a clue. I don't care what color suit I wear. I don't care. I just put on whatever she gives me. I have no preference whatsoever.
As we have done this now for 12 weeks, I have grown to admire her so much.
She's amazing.
She is incredible.
To put up with me all the time, she is amazing. But fashion, I have zero fashion sense, nor do I give a rip.
Yeah, well,
Some people care about it a little too much.
What? It's okay to care about how you look. You feel good. You look good. All that stuff, right?
Yeah. Like, I feel great if I don't have a $15,000 suit on too, though. No. So I'm just fine. So.
Wait, who's wearing $15,000 suits?
Just saying. Hey, you might not be, but I know some that are. Okay? Some that I mentioned already have plenty of money dropped in their suits. Okay. Your boy, that ain't happening.
Yeah. It's clear. It's clear. And here's the thing. If you wear a $15,000 suit, America ain't seeing it because you're wearing a jacket over it. Anyway.
Yeah. So who cares?
Yeah, exactly. All right. Let's get to our picks. And,
are you sure you want to do that?
Yeah. You know, listen,
friendly to you.
The two losses I took last week and.
Oh, justify away. Go ahead.
I was with you on LSU for about 3 weeks and then I changed it in the middle of last week. And the way that game was going,
you get credit for that.
That first half, I was like, oh man, I did not expect that Alabama to look this sloppy. And then that K-State-Texas game though, K-State looked like they were ready to play in Austin. So it's not
they
like,
were. Yeah. And then the talent won.
Well, you know, Texas secondary a little bit more healthy.
I think somebody said that on the podcast. Yeah, that's
yes,
strange.
It is.
But here's the thing too, that game shouldn't have been that close really. Kansas State jumps out, then Texas plays more aggressive and just locks them down. But then the kickoff return was the big one for K-State because they were done. Yep. K-State was done. They were They were down 10, I think, at that point, and Texas had everything rolling, and they gave up that kickoff return. And yeah, it gave you hope for sure. But no, what it basically means is you just keep losing at least one pick every week and just keep going in a bigger and bigger hole, but it's okay.
You know, I actually don't care the trash talk on Fridays from you. What I care about and I absolutely despise are the texts from you on Saturdays.
Well, they're going to keep coming,
yeah,
brother.
Because like you just have those one-liners and you're just, oh man. And like, it's just like your Saturday trash talk to me is hook 'em. And I'm like, oh God.
Or good pick. Good pick, Kev.
All right. We've got some good games here and I went through a few of them and we're not going to go with all the, you know, hey, matchups. And to me, it's some of the close games I think that are going to separate ourselves here. And let's start with Indiana versus Penn State. And Penn State, you know, obviously the spread is not as close, but Penn State's coming off, you know, that emotional loss now at home and Indiana's played really well this season so far. Who you got in this one?
And they've got a good passing attack and they've got good wide receivers. So I think again, what you saw last week from Minnesota, but the difference is Penn State's at home, which is a huge difference. And Penn State just lost. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a big deal, man. That stokes the flames. That gets them more motivated. They're making sure they're on it because Minnesota came out and got up on them really quickly. You could tell they got up on them quickly and, you know, Penn State made a few mistakes. I think Penn State will give up some points because they're secondary because Indiana's good this year, by the way. They're 7-2. I mean, they're really good. They deserve, credit. They deserve to be, you know, possibly in the top 25 at some point in the near future here. But Penn State will win. I'll take Penn State making enough plays, pressing the QB enough, and KJ Hamler will have a couple big plays and I'll take them close.
Hey, what happened to Sean Clifford? On Saturday, again, came into the game with three picks in the game. And there were a couple throws that he made where they weren't in stride with KJ Hamler, a little too high, missed his tight end, a little too low on a couple plays. Did he not look comfortable or was that Minnesota's defense? Like any concern for you here?
First of all, I've had concern for the whole year with him, but mm-hmm. they find a way to manufacture it and make it work against, you know, against Michigan. They did a good job. Remember they put Hamler in the slot and hit a few big plays. What they've always been able to do is hit big plays. Now, I thought he did a good job staying patient in the pocket late, but I will say this, and this is, I'm just telling you from going back and watching the tape. If you watch the tape, two of those plays were pass interferences on two of his picks. I'm being honest. Like, it was pass interference. It should have been called. The pick to end the game, by the way, mm-hmm. was pass interference.
You're right.
The one on the right sideline where KJ Hamler, he gets tackled before he can even come back to the football where Antoine Winfield Jr. it's a great pick. It's an awesome pick. It's, you know, kudos. Those two are questionable calls. One of the two definitely should have been called. And, the first one was really bad and should have been called. But so I don't think he played his best game. But I also don't think he's the type of quarterback yet, but I do think he's gotten better over the last several weeks, but he's still going to make mistakes. He's not the best in the pocket and staying patient and going through his progression, even though he's improving. So he's not on those elite level yet, but I will say he's climbed a level in his play throughout the season.
Yeah. And the entire Nittany Lions fan base, they were losing their mind after that game on the pass interferences that were not called, like you made a reference to.
I mean,
I'm with you.
True.
I go Penn State. The line's 14.5. I actually think they're going to cover in that game. That place, that environment's going to be very loud. All right, our next matchup.
Always bringing in the numbers.
And we'll talk about those numbers a little bit later on too when Bear joins us. The next matchup is our weekly apology to Missouri Tiger fans. Because every time we talk about them, they lose and they haven't won since we were raving about them and their 5-1 start. And since that 5-1 start, they've scored 14-7-0. So they're going backwards when it comes to offense. And this weekend,
why are we talking about them?
I'm talking about them because they're hosting Florida. Remember, they embarrassed Florida last year in the swamp. And in this game, this matchup against Florida, the line is 7. It may be 7.5. And you're sitting there and you're like, whoa, what is up with this as the Gators are on the road? It's actually 7 right now. So who you got in this one?
Florida. I don't even need to go into a long soliloquy and break down this game. Like, what am I breaking down? I mean, there's a good chance Missouri's going to be down another quarterback, for goodness sakes. I mean, they've been dinged up and, you know, no, they're not any good. I don't know. And listen, I'm not saying they can't make it competitive and find a way. And their pass defense was good last week against Georgia, but I think Florida's much too much for them.
You seem even annoyed by that answer. Like, it's just annoyed.
There's so many games that you could have picked and you picked that one.
I did because I'm curious about the line. The line is that 7 line is, whoa, hey, wait a second. It should be 17, right?
What was the line with Vandy last week?
I don't even know.
Yeah, well, they covered it 56-0.
Yeah, exactly. They rolled in that game. But again, this is on the road. We'll see. I'm with you. I think Florida's going to win anyway. Michigan State, Michigan. And I bring that up because this kind of feels like, this could be, if Michigan rolls big on this one, this could be D'Antonio's, last ride here against the rival.
That's crazy to think about, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, if you'd put the odds on, I wonder if a coach getting more heat, D'Antonio or Harbaugh before the season, I think a lot of people probably would have said Harbaugh. But no, it's been a disaster. The fourth quarter collapse to Illinois this past week was the cherry on the sundae. Listen, we've gave credit to all these people, you know, over the years of evolving, and you saw Ed Orgeron doing it, and you've seen Nick Saban do it, all the great coaches. D'Antonio is a great coach that hasn't evolved and hasn't changed. And last year took a big chance instead of hiring new coordinators, that the offense we've seen for years has been anemic, right? It's been bad. And instead of going out and getting a new offensive coordinator or going a new direction, he just promoted different guys to different positions and kind of shuffled the deck of guys and rolled with it. And it's not any better. And you're up 31-17 against Illinois in the fourth quarter and you blow a fourth quarter lead and you're 4-5. I mean, we're talking about Michigan State not even going to a bowl game possibly. Now they got Maryland and Rutgers to end the season, so there's a good chance you're going to a bowl game, but you're going to need your last two games of the season to do it. That's a rough season, man.
Yeah, especially like you mentioned, the collapse of Illinois. Now Illinois is going bowling, and what a turnaround for Lovey with that comeback. And
awesome.
Peter, I love Peters' moxie. Yeah, I mean, he's got that attitude. And you know, Michigan's one of those teams quietly, you know, if they handle their business this week, then they got Indiana, and that leads into hosting Ohio State in a couple weeks. I kind of like that storyline, and I like where we're going. And I think it benefits when Michigan is not a headline. They just head down, just handle your business, and no one's paying attention to you. And then boom. That big rivalry will come up, and that'll dominate the talk Thanksgiving week if they.
Well, just like last year, right? It was the same way with we were all talking about Michigan going to that game instead of Ohio State, mm-hmm. and then Ohio State just absolutely dump trucked them. So
it also helps that Urban send a message to everybody saying, "Hey, it's my last game. Let's get motivated." Right?
Yeah, that definitely helped. Maybe Harbaugh needs to do the same.
Exactly. Right.
Rewrite that letter he wrote.
Yeah. All right. Another interesting matchup. And I love the resurgence of Navy at 7-1 on the road at Notre Dame. Lines at 7. Who you got in this one?
By the way, Notre Dame definitely has been struggling.
Yes. Like
they've had two offensive linemen now to a pretty good unit that was probably the strength of their offense at one point, the offensive line and Ian Book. And they've looked like, Duke has been a train wreck, but they were lucky to beat Virginia Tech and they got dump trucked by Michigan. Remember before that. So I think I'll still trust the Irish, but remember, you're going to get, you know, three or four less possessions in a game like this against Navy, who's going to do the triple option thing. And it's going to be extremely difficult. I think Ian Book's ability, you're going to watch this game and you're going to watch him scramble around and make plays in the passing game that Navy can't do and make bigger plays to Claypool and those guys. And that's, I think that's the difference, but I think it'll be a fun game to watch and it'll be very competitive.
We're both going Notre Dame. Is that what
I'm going Notre Dame? Yeah.
We're both going Notre Dame. All right. Texas, Iowa State.
Who you got?
That's an Ames too.
Wow. You haven't even decided about your picks yet. This is embarrassing. You should have already thought about this.
How about Iowa State? You don't think about these either. Iowa State's favorite.
Well, you
by
don't
7
tell me
points.
What they are. I can't think about them if you don't tell me what they are. You're going against Texas again. Come on, go against Texas again.
Texas 7-point dogs in this one. Boy, that's a lot of points. But if we're going straight up, Iowa State at home against Texas. You're baiting me to pick Texas. That means you're with me in picking Iowa State because I'm going to take Iowa State.
I think Iowa State's better.
But are they going to be better on the field?
Yeah. No, I do. I'll take them in Ames. Yeah. I mean, I just. I think they are. I mean, I think Texas is still, listen, the good win. You know, this past week they ran the football pretty well. And, I just don't think they're a great team. They're a three loss team and they've lost to some good teams. It's hard not to look at LSU and the Oklahoma loss and go, those are two really good teams, two top 10 teams. But I don't know, something feels like it's missing, you know, from Texas. And I think maybe Iowa State might be the better team. And I'll roll with Iowa State, even though they lost a heartbreaker last week to Oklahoma.
I'm with you. I'm taking Iowa State, and big reason why is they're going to get that game on their home turf. And, yep. I like watching Brock Purdy, man. That kid can make some plays. I'm a big fan. All right. Our last three games. I really like these last three games.
Thank God, because Missouri, Florida stunk. I can't believe you picked them.
Okay. That's why we quickly ran through it.
Michigan State. Wow.
It's all about setting you up here. Georgia versus Auburn.
This one's tough. I feel like Auburn can win this game. Now Georgia's banged up. You saw two linemen leave the game. You saw Cager, and we've talked about him on this podcast for weeks and weeks and weeks, and the importance level of Georgia. When it boils down to it, it's going to be a fun matchup, Georgia's offensive line versus Auburn's defensive line. What I've seen from Bo Nix in big games and his ability to throw, and when I think about going against this Georgia defense, he's going to have to make some plays. I don't know if he can do it, and I don't know if he can beat their defense. I think it's a low-scoring game because I don't think Georgia's going to score a ton either, but I think Georgia finds a way to win a close game because they can throw the football and kind of wear Auburn's offense out or Auburn's defense out. And I don't know that I trust Bo Nix to do that against a really good Georgia defense.
So Georgia's favored by 2.5 points. You're going with the dogs.
Yep.
And,
I'm
going with the dogs as well.
Are you really?
Yeah, I am. Because
you got a lot of ground to make up. You need to start picking the other side at some point. I mean, you are way behind in picks.
You don't even know the gap.
I can tell you this with 100% certainty. You're at least 4 games behind.
Yeah, because I lost 2 this past week. So you're not telling me anything different. But I'm not. That doesn't mean that I just, you know what? I'm just going to be adversarial and pick opposite just because. Especially in a game like this. So I'm going Georgia with you as well. Now, next game. I'm really, really curious to know where you're going with this.
Minnesota. You go first with whatever the game is.
Minnesota, 3-point dogs at Iowa.
I know where you're going with this.
No. You go first.
You got to go with your Hawkeyes.
There's no way I'm going with Iowa.
Listen, I know that number I'm learning throughout this year, and obviously Bear will be good at this too, but I'm learning that when the number stinks, it stinks for a reason.
Yeah.
We've seen multiple things like that this year. I don't buy into Iowa. I think Iowa is exceptionally sound. I like Iowa. I don't think they're going to beat themselves. By the way, they seem like they get themselves in a spot every year to beat a top ranked team, and they're, you know, in contention, and they're going to do that. And they got Ohio State a couple years ago, and they almost got Penn State, remember, last second at home. Iowa at home, I'm sure it's going to be a competitive game. I like the Gophers. I like the Gophers offensive line. I like Tanner Morgan more than I like Nate Stanley. And who said that before the season, by the way? Just count that on one hand of people that ever would have thought that. So I'll take the dependable. I'll row the boat and know what I know where the boat's going. The boat has a compass with Minnesota. The boat doesn't have a compass with Iowa all the time.
Oh man. If it was any other team, the way the metrics are, I mean, FPI favors Iowa by 61% and what crushed me.
Shut up and pull the trigger.
You know
bro?
What crushed me a few weeks ago? The Nate Stanley, you know, I'll take the better quarterback against Shea Patterson.
That was beautiful.
Tanner Morgan is way, a much better quarterback in this matchup. And A, he's the guy I trust.
That means Iowa wins convincingly.
You're right. Because honestly, Vegas is telling everybody to take Minnesota. The house is saying, please take Minnesota, but yep. I'm going to take Minnesota, man. I just can't go against it. So we're really boring right now. So we're lockstep in line with each other. And the final matchup, and you are in Waco, game day is going to be there. And Matt Rhule's done an incredible job, undefeated. What a turnaround for the Bears the last 3 years. So Baylor hosting Oklahoma. Who you got?
Oklahoma. I think Baylor's been one of the best stories and the most fun things to watch, but I know Jalen Hurts will score points. I know they will score a lot, and I don't always trust their defense, but I also think that defense is going against a pretty shaky offense in Baylor. And, you know, I know they want to be physical and they want to run the football, but they're not a great running team. Oklahoma, you know, you're talking about they're a great running team, and mainly because of Jalen Hurts, but then they can throw the ball to CeeDee Lamb, who can create explosive plays. And I love Baylor's defense. I love their story. I think the ride comes to an end this weekend, a convincing end by Oklahoma.
All right, let's play. Is there a magic number? Like, for example, if this game is in the low 20s, that favors Baylor.
So it won't be in the low 20s.
Okay. But I'm playing a hypothetical with you.
Yeah, I mean, right. Well, and in fairness to Baylor, they found a way to muck every game up.
Exactly. I mean,
they find a way to make it kind of – you can't count the daggum three overtimes for TCU at 29 points. But they gave up 9 in regulation.
Yes.
By the way, all the talk about the SEC 8 years ago and the 9-6 game, the Big 12 this week was 9-9 going into overtime. The SEC game was 46-41.
Yep.
I mean, just think about that. That's kind of shifted and changed. But, you know, they just find a way, no matter who they play, to muck it up and make it. I mean, Oklahoma State has a really good offense. They held them to 27, you know. But I think this will be the most points they've given up all year long. I think they're going to give up over 30 in regulation. And that's the worst that they've done. And I don't think they can score 30. I don't think they can do that.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Charlie Brewer, though, he
boring
was
week of picks.
Really boring week of picks.
Well, I mean, if somebody wasn't steering us in a horrible direction,
you got other games you wanted to call out? I mean, I thought our lineup was fantastic. And Taylor brings up a good point. He just popped in my ear real quick about Clemson Wake Forest. And maybe a couple weeks ago, I would have said Clemson Wake Forest and had that game circled. But the way Wake Forest looked, I mean, and that loss, I think the line is like 34 points favoring Clemson. Ever since that North Carolina game, the Tigers have looked completely different. I think they've beaten teams by an average of 41 points per game.
Yeah, like, and Surratt's out too for Wake.
So I'm sorry, our boy Newman, we love him. He can't win that game by himself, especially the way the Clemson offense looks. Right?
What about LSU Ole Miss? I think that'll be interesting for a little bit.
Are you picking Ole Miss?
No, I'm not, but okay. It's still a better game than some of the other ones you wanted to talk about. I mean, LSU, Ole Miss has been really explosive on the ground. That they've been, you know, Plumlee kid has been really energetic for their offense, and they create, I think they have the most 20-yard runs in the country outside of Oklahoma. And, so that'll be an interesting thing to see if they can maybe play some keep away from Joe Burrow and company and have some success running the football. And you think about the letdown effect, you know, I mean, that was their season. If you don't believe me, listen to Ed Orgeron after the game.
He was, that was great. I love
pretty, it. Pretty daggum pumped up about what he is. So, I mean, I think that one's it'll be an interesting spot at least.
You know what we're doing next week, Taylor? He's taking all these shots. He is going to give us his games next week. All right. That's your assignment, David Pollack. And I know you're not the type of guy that does homework. That's going to be your assignment next week where you roll out the games.
I mean, there's a bunch already off the A&M in Georgia and Oregon or Arizona State next week. And
I can't wait.
Texas Baylor's next week.
I can't wait.
Temple UC's next week, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yes. See, there's one for you.
See,
Ohio State, Penn State. That next week's going to be pretty solid, bro. Illinois, Iowa will be a fun game to pick next week. I think they play next week.
I picked some good games. I don't understand what your deal is, man.
No, you didn't. What's your deal, bro?
I
hear you, Harbaugh.
What's your deal? All right.
I hear you, Harbaugh.
All right, before we let you go, since it was such a rousing success on Wednesday with our questions from our listeners, let's do it again, considering your answer. Oh, God. The listeners had great questions. I'm not sure about these answers. If you have a question you want to hear it on the podcast for Herbie or Pollack, tweet using the hashtag CFBPod. All right, you ready for this? I think you can handle this one. What's your post game day routine? Are you on a plane straight home or are you hanging out and watching the games?
Depends on the game and depends on my company, because I bring my son and a buddy. He usually comes, I bet you 6 to 8 times in a year. And then my family will come several times. My daughter will bring a friend several times. And if my son and them come, we always stay no matter what. Like, he's coming this week with a buddy. So Baylor, Oklahoma will be there and we'll be on the sidelines watching the game, but it just depends. But I would say 70 to 80% of the time we're there watching the game with my family, with my daughter and my son.
How'd you handle this past weekend, Tuscaloosa? Did you stick around or did you gotta fly back because of your two championship games?
Two championship games on Sunday, and my son was not allowed to come with me because Friday morning, I get up for a sports center always at six, you know, in the morning. Mm-hmm. And so he has to get up with me. And then Saturday game day, I have a, you know, six something sports center. So he would have to get up early and we had championship game and we needed him nice and fresh. So he had to stay home.
I like it. How did he handle that? Did he understand that or was he just ticked off?
Kevin, there is nothing. I've never found anything that does tick him off. He is literally the definition of just smooth and steady and nothing bothers him.
How did you get so lucky? You've got a great wife and a great son. How did you get so lucky?
I don't know that it's that lucky because it drives me nuts. It drives me absolutely batshiznit crazy when there's no urgency in life. Like I'm a urgency kind of guy and bringing it and he's like, yeah, it's going to be okay. It's going to be cool.
He's the yin to your yang.
And my wife's the same way. My wife is exactly the same. My wife is literally just steady as it gets. I've never seen her yell. She very rarely gets upset. If anything's remotely wrong, I give her coffee and feed her and she's fine. So.
But you are a lucky man.
Yes, I am.
Enjoy the Pollock household for all of us. Hey, buddy, enjoy Waco. I'm sure your son's going to have a blast. Let's hopefully have a great game on ABC on Saturday night.
Yes, sir. Thank you, brother.
Looking forward to seeing the jacket on the set.
Cold Waco.
We'll be back in a minute with Chris Felica, the Bear, joining us. Handful of questions about his journey to game day, the pressure he feels with picks, his own picks on that show, and what he thinks about the playoff rankings entering the weekend. But first, a word from Allstate, AT&T, and Goodyear. Because mayhem on Saturdays in the fall is inevitable. Mayhem happens on the field, off the field, and in the polls. Mayhem lives on the wind, in the rain, on the foot of an errant kick, and during a trap game. You'll find mayhem in the parking lot, during tailgates, charcoal that's not totally out, an errant football through a window, a flat tire, a lost side view mirror, etc. You get the point. Allstate protects you from mayhem in the parking lot and outside it, at home and away. You can't stop mayhem from happening, but you can get better protected from it with Allstate. The potential for mayhem during the playoff race is rampant. Underdogs, trap games, unexpected weather, etc., etc., etc. Get better protected from mayhem with Allstate. Contact your local Allstate agent today.
Yeah, college football is great unless, of course, it's just okay. Like when students decide to paint their chest with different letters to spell some word and then they stand together to get on TV but they're spelling the word wrong or they lined up in the wrong order. Sure, not everybody's an English major, and I get it. We can't all win the national spelling bee. But come on, people. You should know how to spell Wildcats or Bulldogs. The purpose isn't to have a word jumble in the student section to keep your mind sharp or something. Just okay is not okay, whether it's college football fans or your wireless network. You want to watch the best college football just like you want to go with AT&T, America's best network. Don't settle for typos on people's chests and don't settle for anything less than the best wireless network. Get the best college football and get AT&T. Best network based on GWS One Score, September 2019.
Sometimes for inspiration, you just have to look up. For more than 60 years, the Goodyear blimp has fueled greatness on the gridiron by providing aerial coverage of some of the most legendary moments in college football history. When the Goodyear blimp rises above a stadium, it inspires players to reach higher and rise to the challenge of the game's biggest moments. Now it's your turn to go further with Goodyear. Discover tires made to rise above the rest. Learn more at Goodyear.com. Goodyear, more driven. He has emerged as one of the stars of College Game Day, but anyone who has worked at ESPN knows that he has been a big part of making on-air people look smart with his information. And now he is on air. Chris the Bear Felica joining us here on the College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Bear, great to have you here with us. And first off, where do we get the nickname?
I have Lee Corso to thank for that.
Even better.
And there's a story. I'll provide that there'll be a little bit of a PG. I don't want to go full R, but okay. I'll give the PG version for the podcast. So it was, Ohio State Miami National Championship game, which would have been January 2003. Mm-hmm. Kirk and I are having lunch or brunch in the lobby of the hotel where we are. I can't remember if it was the Phoenician or the Tempe Mission, wherever we were, Tempe Mission Palms. And, it's in the lead up to that game. and Kirk and I probably had just gotten out of bed and we have gym shorts and t-shirts on and kind of looking a little disheveled. Mm-hmm. And anyone who's been out to dinner with us or have seen us out to dinner know that we like to fill the reason the table is there is to fill it up with whatever you can fill it up with.
I appreciate that.
There's always something for the middle. And Kirk and I are down there and Coach comes wandering in after his morning walk. He's got his usual morning attire, his team uniform on, black leather jacket, blue jeans, white tennis shoes. And Lee is the kind of guy who never makes like any bones. I don't want to like sneak in and like be quiet and not draw attention. So Lee comes in, top of his lungs, Chris Felica, Lee, Kirk Herbstreit, how you guys doing? Right over to, so here I am, and now everyone's, okay. So Lee comes over and looks at the table and looks at me and then looks at Kirk and looks at the table and looks at me again. And he says, look at you, Felica. You're just like this big bear. All you like to do is eat, sleep, and I'll let you finish the third S there right there. So,
and it stuck after
and,
that.
And since then, it stuck. It's beautiful.
When he said that, what was Herbie's reaction? I'm sure he loved it, right?
Oh, absolute laughter because it was genuine. But you have to remember, this is 2003, so before Lee had his stroke and when he was in his wit and just impeccable, just spontaneous humor, and it was unbelievable. So it was that era, and it was perfect, and it's great.
That's great. Like, you get nicknamed by a legend,
correct.
Right?
Correct.
How many years have you been on game day?
Kirk and I started the same year in 1996.
Wow. I didn't know you went that far back.
Yep. I started in 96 as just basically doing solely the research for the show. And it's been evolving ever since research to research co-producer type deal. And then finally in like 2012, I want to say they finally said, let's throw this guy on air for a little bit and give some picks or some information.
So anybody in TV, you got to go through like, you know, and I'm not talking about analysts. I'm talking about anybody. If you're a host, you go through a lot of things. You go through small markets. You go through that experience. You do small things to kind of work out the kinks. Here you are making your TV debut on the biggest college football show and maybe the biggest studio show ever. What was that like for you in 2012 when you made your debut?
I was always a little hesitant in like wanting to, I was like, oh, no, I'm pretty comfortable in this role, producer, research, stats guy. Like, I don't want to come across as this loud New Yorker talking with New York accent, loud, throwing hands all over the place. And so I was at Kirk and Lee Fitting at the producer at the time really were instrumental in like getting me to do it. And finally when the show, and we did it intermittently throughout maybe 11 and 12, more 12, I think, than 11. And then when the show went to 3 hours, they were like, all right, you've got no choice now. You're going to be more of a part of the show. Cause I remember at the time, this is 6 years ago, like gambling was still kind of taboo.
Yeah.
But they knew that I had information and ways to phrase things and make gambling related information kind of like, even if you're not betting on a game, it's something to watch out for. Just about, hey, you know, the last 12 times Michigan State's been an underdog, they've won 10 of those 12 games outright and covered 11 of them. So even though Michigan's a big favorite today against the Spartans, be careful. Just stuff like that. Like if you're a casual fan and maybe you're like, ah, Michigan's going to blow out Michigan State, but even if you aren't betting on it, you're still going to pay attention and do that. So we did that. And then, the board came into existence. I believe it was, 14, right? 14, 15, 16, 17. Yeah. I think it was 14. I think maybe it did the board 15. I can't remember now, but, that's been another way to get gambling type information in the show. Cause look, and that's something that I'm really proud of myself and Lee and the decision makers here at the company and the sport. Like, hey, maybe it wasn't legal state to state, but it was legal in Nevada. It's legal in a lot of places throughout the world and people are doing it regardless. And we didn't play dumb and be naive. Oh no, people, there's no way people are betting on games. We did it very tastefully through, didn't inundate people with it. And now we have, it's a regular staple. We got segments on SportsCenter that you and I did last year on Fridays, and now Saturday mornings. I do a segment on Saturday morning.
There's a show.
There's a show an hour every day on ESPN focusing on gambling. So I'm pretty proud of being it part of the forefront in incorporating more gambling lingo into our coverage
here. It's great. And I'm a big fan of course, the podcast too that you do with Stanford Steve, where you guys talk about, you know, lines and you talk about teams. You find a way to break things down and go through the whole process, right? Mm-hmm. And trends and stuff. But at the same time, you're breaking down games with information. It's not just, hey, this is just a betting podcast.
And that's the thing that I think some people, I mean, gambling Twitter can be an absolute sewer if you want to dive into mentions and things like that at times. But I think some people I'll throw out a note or a trend like this week, a good one for the game, at Auburn tomorrow. Like, you've got to go back, the last 10 times you've had a top five team favored on the road by a field goal or less, they've lost 8 of those 10 teams. Now, does that mean Georgia is going to lose at Auburn?
No.
But at the same time, it's something, hey, the reason this line is low, they're on the road facing a ranked team outside the top 10 who's a decent team that's at home. It's a short number. Maybe your first inclination is to take the top five team, but more often than not, it hasn't worked out. And certainly tomorrow there are things to incorporate with Georgia's injuries at wide receiver and on the offensive line. Can Bo Nix and the Auburn offense generate anything against a really good defense? But it's just something to consider into your decision-making and betting on game, because I do believe that maybe the names change and the teams change and maybe the coaches change, but I do believe certain situations, it's more of a college football is so emotional. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you're dealing with 18 to 21, 22 year old kids. They can't get up every week. They're peaks and valleys. And a lot of these spots really like the one for Baylor tomorrow as well. You've got only once there has been an underdog of at least 7 points on their home field, bringing an 9-0 record into the game. And that was the 1-2 game in 93 where Florida State was a 7-point favorite at Notre Dame, lost the game on the field. The 6 times period that a 9-0 team has been an underdog on their home field against someone, they won the game 4 out of the 6 times. So it's a good spot to situation where Baylor you think is going to play a good game, but at the same time, can Baylor slow that offense down? You can make a certain football judgment and say Oklahoma is simply better than Baylor. Baylor's living on borrowed time, and there's no way I'm going to bet that trend. I like what I see on the but I just think it's good info. If you don't want to use it as actionable information, I say to people too, my first, I don't want to say responsibility or the way I'm wired, as I said, starting out as a researcher on the show, my first thought process is news, information, good note, good nugget. Like the first thing, my producer would ask me, with Ohio State this week, when was the last time we were a 50-point favorite in a game? That doesn't mean lay 51 or 52 with Ohio State or take 51 with Rutgers, but it's just a piece of information that whether you're going to use it to bet it, maybe not, but it's just a fun note to throw out there.
Yeah. And your job is to gather all the information, sort it out, and then use it as a background, right, to an educated guess. And how much do you take the trends? How much do you weigh those things into the eye test, your own eye test, when making those picks on that big board?
Yeah, I'll look at the trend, and then I will my first inclination when I try to just come up with really specific, narrow trends that fit certain situations this week. So I will come up with I'll look into something and be that's interesting. And then I will look, be like, okay, what are my eyeballs and my brain telling me about this matchup this year? Can this trend really be supported by what I'm seeing on the field? Because first and foremost, I'm always going to use my judgment, my football judgment, to make a pick. I could probably make a better case for Auburn this week as a small home underdog against Georgia as I could Baylor maybe winning outright against Oklahoma. But it wouldn't put me past, as you know, Temple alum.
Yeah.
Matt Rhule has been an unbelievable head coach as an underdog. I think going back to Temple, I think he's something like 32-14 he against the number.
He thrives.
Like 18, and he's the best.
Yes.
It was funny. Steve and I did, our, like, our favorite college football head coaches. And I think I had Matt Rule 1 and Matt Campbell 2. Like, the week Iowa State played Baylor, I think we did it because they were 1-2 on my list. And I can't wait to get down there and see him this week. But, and the other thing in terms of my going about the board, and I think you've probably noticed this as well. And last week was a perfect example of, I am very big on fading, aka betting against public underdogs.
Oh, yes.
And that was the spot that Illinois was in last week. Every person in the world who, oh, why is Illinois a big underdog against Michigan State? They stink. So I was like, at first I was like, oh, do I really want to get involved in this game early in the week? And then all throughout the week, it was Illinois. John Murray from Westgate Superbook, it was like, oh, it's like a 10-1 ticket count in Illinois. And I'm like, oh, by the time Friday rolled around, I'm like, all right, I got to add this to the column and put it on the board. And that game was about to be 35-3 before halftime, and it would have been over. Touchdown pass, off receiver shoulder pads, interception in the end zone, Hail Mary before the half. And you could see it coming.
Yes.
But the week before, Florida was a massive public underdog. The world loved Florida, plus the 6 points against Georgia. And Georgia won the game by a touchdown, late Florida touchdown.
So today, I will give you a perfect example. And this is close to your heart too. It's the Miami game against Virginia. And Miami has struggled coming into that game, right?
Yep.
And Vegas has them favored. Yep. And the whole time and I'm talking to Pollock. Pollock's like, I don't care about, you know, lines and stuff. And I was like, this is unbelievable. Vegas is telling us something.
Correct.
They're telling everybody, please take Virginia.
Go
right?
ahead. I dare you to take Virginia.
And that is
absolutely
that goes against anything with the eye test the previous 2 weeks, right?
It's so counterintuitive as to what you would normally think. There's the reason those buildings are really big and tall and have really nice chandeliers and stuff in there, because the public is wrong more often than not. That was a 5-alarm siren fire. You see Virginia dog against the Miami team that just lost to Virginia Tech or whatever. That was like, it was funny. I can't remember if it was, Steve and SVP or if it was a couple other buddies of mine, but I was like, right or wrong, win or lose, the only side in this game you can play is Miami.
Miami, right? It's screaming.
And they were terrible. They had the one touchdown but that was a typical Virginia struggled moving the ball, poor red zone turnovers. And sometimes the number tells you the story. And I was having a conversation a couple of weeks back with Chris Andrews from South Point, and I haven't pulled the data yet, but I'm going to, because I want to see if my, again, counterintuitive thought process is right here. I would much rather, I think the key number is like being 3-7. It's my theory that favorites laying 3.5 have a much better cover percent, ATS record, than favorites laying 2 or 2.5. I think the public and bettors would tend to think, oh, they're laying less than a field goal. You get that key number of 3. You're more likely or not. It lands on 3, you win. My thought process is, if Vegas is daring you or saying, really keeping it under a field goal, you win by a field goal, you win, that triggers a little thing. Okay, well, why is it under 3 and not? So I would say, like, the play is take underdogs at +2, +2.5, and take favorites -3.5. So I'm going to go back and the same thing holds true, I think, for like -6, -6.5, as opposed to like minus, you saw last week.
Yep.
Minnesota was Penn State was -6, -6.5, lost the game on the field. Alabama was -6, lost the game on the field. Team like Southern Miss laying 7.5 against UAB. 1 by 40. It's, again, that's a small sample size right there, but one of these days I'm going to fire that pivot table up in my Excel grid and see.
I wanted the final results because that is a fascinating play here. And you also not only are on game day having a presence there, and they create a great conversation where they bring you in while everybody's there on the main set. And I love how Herbie's always kind of poking the bear here.
You've noticed that.
Yeah, it's the best. It's totally the best, right? I do want to know sometimes though, how much pressure do you feel to get the picks right on that board?
A lot. And I'm mad at myself for last week. Talked about Coach Corso before. Like he always, oh, remember, we're in the entertainment business. So here I am. Usually I only do the three games on the mm-hmm. board, but it, oh, entertainment. Let me pick the big one versus two game that we're at. And I succumb to the entertainment portion. I'm in the money making business. I'm in the being correct business. So I got sucked into doing an official board pick with the game that I normally wouldn't pick. And it was a fourth game and I only did it. And what did it do? It lost.
Why wouldn't you normally pick that game?
It's funny. There's been a lot of discussion. This, I don't say a lot, but people have been like, oh, well, you should always pick those big games against the number. Like my thought is those games, the numbers probably are as sharp as they could be. There really isn't an edge in a game like that. Whereas sometimes in a game like, I don't know, Western Kentucky UAB, maybe our power ratings, like I can remember that game specifically because that was a game I put on the board that week. Our numbers had Western Kentucky favored. Vegas had UAB favored. So Western Kentucky goes on the board, wins the game. And I think a lot of times you can find a little bit more value in some of these non-marquee leagues. But there are people out there who are curious, oh, why are you picking these games? My message is, I'm here to give ATS winners and try and make the, if people are betting on games, here are the three games or four games today that I like the most. Mm-hmm. I don't care if it's Alabama, LSU, Minnesota, Penn State, Illinois, Michigan State, Southern Miss, UAB, whatever it is. I don't care. I'm just looking for the games that I think fall into the best probability of my kind of hybrid, observing spot, public money, a public dog, public team trend. I try to incorporate all of that together and come up with what I think are the best plays of the day. That's like great. Last night, Florida State was in, nobody in the world wanted to bet Florida State last week. So I was like, who the heck would want to bet on a team that just fired its head coach, got embarrassed by its rival, was called out, and now going on the road that they've gotten drilled the last couple of years.
And they're going in the cold.
Who wanted to do that? Yeah. I raised my hand and they wanted to win the game.
Yeah. And that was the team that we finally saw play four quarters, or at least close out a game, yep. right? Because of the talent that they have. What I'm fascinated about as well is you guys get the juice. You get the juice started for everybody on Saturday mornings, right? And it's not official. I told Herbie this. It's not officially game day until we watch game day mm-hmm. to experience that. Do you have a favorite moment through the years looking back where you're like, man, that was awesome.
The two that immediately come to mind are first time we went to Fargo when we did a show in the middle of a street.
Yeah, and there was a movie theater in the back.
A movie theater on the side, and the street is just lined with people forever. And that was one of the first kind of non-traditional shows that we did in terms of why are they at an FCS day? And it was awesome. That was unbelievable. And then Ole Miss had always been that site that we wanted to get to for a while, get to the Grove and be set up there. And to be there in 2014.
Is that the Katy Perry game?
Yes. Yeah. And she was the guest picker and we all bought in with the whole bow ties and the scene there was unbelievable. And you talked about the juice setting up the day.
Yeah.
Like that set everything up for probably. I mean, yeah, they won some Sugar Bowls and Archie, they had some great days, but I would argue that was probably the best day in the history of Ole Miss football.
Yeah.
You could make a pretty darn good case from start to finish with us getting there for the first time. What happened in the game, getting to where they were in the rankings and getting to the New Year's Six that year.
You can make a case, and I'm glad you actually brought this up. And I'm not talking about the powerhouses you guys go to Tuscaloosa mm-hmm. and Alabama and you're going to make a trip there every year, probably the way they play. You'll make a trip to Baton Rouge every year. You make a trip. Yeah. That rare trip to Austin, but you're probably going to make a trip to Austin and Columbus. It's those trips to Memphis.
Yes.
You know, that was probably the greatest day in Memphis history because they have game day to start the morning. Yep. Then they have the primetime game and then they win that game, right? On ABC. And I would make the case for Temple. That was the greatest day when you guys were there at, downtown by, you know, the Constitution Center, and then Temple plays Notre Dame, and we almost beat Notre Dame on national television. That would have been the greatest day. And looking back, people in these towns and these fan bases look at it that we have arrived.
Yep.
And do you feel, are you aware of that when you're getting on the set?
Absolutely.
Okay, this place has arrived.
Absolutely. You feel that. And it's kind of cliche and corny because I get asked so many times, like, hey, what's your favorite place to go? And I always say, it's either somewhere where we have never been, or it's somewhere where we have not been in a very long time. Like Ames, that was an unbelievable scene to be pulling up. It was like Field of Dreams at like 5 a.m. with a row of just headlights, like looking down the road, looking ready to park when the tailgate lights and the parking lots opened up. You just look down the road and knowing that the only reason they're showing up this early is because a good number of them are here. Because game day's here. So yeah, any place we go for the first time or first time, long time is,
and then Pullman, right?
You know, I should have,
right?
I should have put that one in when we talked about Fargo and Ole Miss, because that was pretty special. A lot of times we talked about going to Pullman forever, at least ever since they had the, I mean, just think about that. Our show created this alumni group fan, spectacle or journey or mission to get their flag on our show every year since 2003. And it was 15 years in the makings, but to get there last year and Rodney Perez, who directs our show, chose an awesome spot where it gave like kind of this like bowl amphitheater look and just the sea of maroon and flags and the day, the temperature, it was just perfect. And again, they've gotten to the Rose Bowl a couple times and had some pretty special seasons, but from start to finish for our show to be there finally. And then have Drew Bledsoe be one of their greatest football players ever is the guest picker. The Tyler Trent story was that day as well on that show. And you cap that day off with, Iowa's Purdue's win over Ohio State and Washington State beats Oregon. Like that was just an unbelievable day. And often you worry about like, is it going to live up to what we really hope it could be? And not only did that live up to it, it exceeded anything that we could have thought of.
We will eventually get to the college football playoff and the current scene, but I'm really enjoying this conversation. Before we get to that though, you know, with all your travels, and I know maybe this will be the hardest question you're going to get in this conversation. Uh-oh. Best place that you've eaten on the road?
Smoking Pig in Anderson, South Carolina.
All right. There we go.
It's Pendleton, South Carolina.
Really?
Smoking Pig barbecue is ridiculous.
And where is it at?
It's just outside Clemson, South Carolina.
Okay.
It's so good. And that's up there.
But you didn't hesitate.
No.
Like you went right to it.
No, that is a no brainer given Chuck's Fish, which now is in Athens and Tuscaloosa as well. That is also really good.
And you're mentioning places that you could see yourself visiting at least once a year too, that I've noticed, right?
Which is
like
great.
Venues where you're like, okay, I know I'm going back, you know?
Giuseppe's in, Columbus is an unbelievable Italian place. Really, really good. Hopefully we'll get there next week.
Yeah.
Because I would assume I don't make the ultimate decisions.
Understand, but
Ohio State, Penn State, and Columbus, I would think would be highly likely. That's an awesome Italian place. I mean, there's so many places that I'm forgetting right now, but those three would be on I'm not always like the big Mount Rushmore guy, but those three would make Mount Rushmore.
Okay. Now this was great. I love that we could talk a little bit about this because I think with our listeners, they have so many questions about the game day experience, and you are part of that DNA. And I'm glad you mentioned Rodney because there's so many people that passionately love the game day experience that work on that show, you know, like Drew and Jim and Zoe and of course Lee Fitting and guys that have been through it through the years.
And all the guys about like in West River who like driving those trucks every, I mean, I remember last year, I think they had to go from Pullman, Washington to Jacksonville, Florida. those guys who set up the set and have to break it down like before three, those are the Our job is easy.
Yes.
We're flying in. Yeah, we got to get up early. We have a tight connection or a delay in Atlanta. They're in a truck driving across the country, loving every second.
And the setup in every town is completely different. Yep. Unless you've gone back, well, mm-hmm. we know where we're going at Tuscaloosa. We know where we're going at Clemson. We know where we're going at Ohio State and Columbus. But many of these places are, okay, we've never been here before. Let's just do it. Let's just do it in this street. Beale Street. Yep. Yeah, we'll own
right,
it.
Like, exactly.
And you guys owned it. They find the best stuff when they go do these checkups. They go a couple weeks in advance and say, hey, let's just kind of get a lay of the land mm-hmm. and how we're going to do it. We're getting a better idea of the lay of the land after 2 weeks from the committee. Did the committee get it right on Tuesday night?
I think they got it right in terms of the top five. I kind of tweeted out about an hour or so before the rankings that, well, what I thought it would be. And I thought Georgia would be at four and Alabama would be at five. And there are a couple of reasons why I thought Georgia would be four. I think first and foremost, the one thing that they would never admit they kind of save themselves a headache, because if you put Georgia at four this week and Alabama at five this week, people aren't going to be like, how did Alabama not fall out of the top four? They just lost on their home field to LSU. So you put Georgia at four because, number one, they do have two better wins than anything Alabama has. Yeah, they have the loss on the home field against South Carolina. Yeah, I get it. But they got two better wins than anything Alabama has, and they play at Auburn this week. And if they win at Jordan-Hare tomorrow, they're going to go to four anyway. If they lose at Jordan-Hare, they're gone. Mm-hmm. So it makes like perfect logical sense. The two things that I was surprised with disappointed or like manner would be like the committee. They basically, for lack of a better word, gave the middle finger to Baylor. Like they have zero respect.
Is that Baylor. Just on the Big 12 in general?
Well, how is Oklahoma ahead of them? Mm-hmm. Is what Baylor has, again, the FPI doesn't go into count into anything. They got four FPI top 40 wins. They got two road wins against teams the committee has ranked in Texas, in Oklahoma State and Kansas State. Oklahoma, by the way, lost as a 24-point favorite in Manhattan, and they got the zero in the loss column. Like, I don't know how Baylor is down at 13. Their strength of record, which is the ESPN created formula to determine like what you achieve versus the schedule you face. Baylor's third in that. Like, it's hard for a power, third or fourth. I have the number in front of me. Let me look and make sure. Yeah, they're third. They're third and Minnesota's fourth. It goes to show and measure how hard it is for, especially for a power five team to be 9-0. It's hard to do. Now you can make, clearly they made a football judgment that they think Oklahoma is better than Baylor. But I guess the point spread kind of indicates that. But at the same time, like there are a lot of things that you can look at and say Baylor right now deserves to be ranked ahead of Oklahoma, at least in if not the Pac-12 teams. And why Minnesota still was behind Oregon and Utah. Oregon and Utah don't have a single win combined against a team that the committee has ranked. They both have a loss. Minnesota just beat the number four team in the committee's
ranking. A team the committee loved
last week, yeah. In Penn State. They beat them. They also have the zero win the loss column. Yeah, they struggled early in the year, but haven't they done more right now than Oregon or Utah has? So I thought they would be ahead of both those Pac-12 teams, but as you know, Matt Rhule, PJ Fleck, two guys that tend to look for motivational type things, play the underdog role very, very well. I think PJ Fleck's teams have won like seven or eight straight games now when they've been an underdog
outright,
on the field.
Yes.
I don't think either Matt or PJ are too disappointed to be able to walk into their locker rooms and their practice facility this week and be like,
Yeah, they don't care about us.
You guys stink.
Yeah.
Clearly you don't belong.
Let's stay focused. Right.
Yeah. So those were my three takeaways from yesterday. And people are already projecting who's going to play. The one interesting scenario that I had, I threw it out there on Twitter earlier this week, like you kind of circle back after you absorb everything that's immediately pertinent. And then I'm like, okay, so what would happen if Georgia wins against Auburn and then they win the SEC and you're not stuck. I'm assuming it would be Ohio State 1, Clemson 2, Georgia 3, and LSU 4. The committee in their bylaws and scheduling what matchup goes to what bowl game, they will not put the number one team at a geographical disadvantage. Would they consider number one Ohio State versus number four LSU from the SEC in Atlanta? Would they consider Atlanta a geographic disadvantage for Ohio State? It would obviously be easier travel, you would think, for both for Ohio State. I don't know if I would consider Atlanta a geographic disadvantage. I don't think the LSU base, after being in Atlanta, mm-hmm. going to the SEC championship game and losing, I don't know if I'd consider that as a home game for, I know the SEC title game's there, but I don't think that's an LSU like crowd at all. I think it'd be a ton of Ohio State fans there. And at the same time, if they do that, then you got Clemson, Georgia in a 2-3 game, and you're sending both of those teams 2,000 miles across the country. And there probably isn't a fan base out there that's had a shell out more cross country flights in the last few years than Clemson. Mm-hmm. So, I'm just curious to see if that is how it were to play out. Like, would the committee put Ohio State, LSU in the Peach Bowl or the Fiesta Bowl?
It's a fascinating scenario too. And it would depend on how Georgia would beat LSU if LSU were to just stay at four and not drop out, right?
Right. If that is the game, and I'm assuming it's going to be, and Georgia Cager is healthy, the offensive line is healthy, like that defense is nasty, mm-hmm. filthy, good. And Auburn had a little bit of a plan in dirtying up the pocket and getting a good interior rush on Burrow. That would be an interesting game in Atlanta.
Auburn didn't have the quarterback to execute the offense in the second half.
Correct.
And Georgia does.
Yes.
That would be the difference, right?
And you're talking about like geographical disadvantage in the mm-hmm. CFP. Like that's almost a road game for LSU mm-hmm. in Atlanta there.
Yeah.
Like that'll be interesting if that's where we are.
Bear, we appreciate it, man. Enjoy Waco. And, as the season progresses, hopefully we can get you back on the pod.
Yeah, I think before bowl games. Yeah.
Yeah. That would be great because I know a lot of people want to have game day questions and to get the experience in the background. Before I let you go though, do you have another story that you want to share with us with Herbie, Corso, Dez, the entire crew, RD Fowler, where you're just like, gosh, this was great. Anything?
It's funny. I think it sounds a little corny and it's not necessarily like on the show, but it's just the relationships and like, it's not a lot of times at work in a professional setting. Like, I don't want to speak for you or anybody else, but you see it a lot around here. Like you're on a show or you're on a project and it's just, it's strictly business.
Yes.
You're working, you see them at work and that's it. The relation, and I'm going to tailor it especially towards Chris and Kirk, just because mm-hmm. I've known and worked with them for 25, 26 years. It's like, it's more than, and it's like that. It's like that with Dez and Reese and Coach, as well. When you see each other, you can joke and jab and you look forward to being around, but especially in the sense of like Chris and Kirk, like it goes deeper than that. Like I've been on vacations with Chris in Las Vegas. I've been to both Chris and Kirk's weddings. Chris was at my wedding mm-hmm. in St. Thomas. Kirk and I have own horses together and we go to the Derby. It's deeper than just like me being the researcher stat guy for College Game Day I said this actually Masters week as well. Like if I could have gone back and told like 15-year-old Chris Felica that in the 25 years from now or whatever it is, you're going to be working with Dick Vitale at the Final Four. Then after that game is over, you're going to get on a plane with Sean McDonough and go to Augusta, Georgia and cover the Masters. Like he would have like laughed at you.
Exactly.
I mean, it's the definition of living the dream. It really is. And there isn't a show or a day that goes by that I'm not like thankful for and appreciative of like every like friendship and opportunity that the last 25 years or so.
Bear, I love it. You guys are a family and it shows that you're a family. And honestly, it's great to hear that story at the end too, because I do that all the time. It humbles us, it grounds us, and it gives us an appreciation of what we do every day, because I always have those conversations. If 14, 15-year-old Kevin Nagani knew what he was doing, he'd be like, get out of here.
Yeah, keep dreaming.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what we do. We live the dream every single day. Bear, you're on this podcast with us, but what about your other podcast with Stanford Steve?
Every Wednesday, Stanford Steve and the Bear usually drops a late afternoon, early evening, Eastern time. If you're looking for picks, discussion, and whatever way Stanford Steve decides to prod me and get me all wound up on a particular week, you found the spot.
Good stuff. Cannot wait for Saturday, Bear. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely.
Appreciate the Bear and Pollock for joining us here on the podcast this Friday. Also want to thank our sponsors, Allstate, AT&T, and Goodyear. Check out our brand new podcast, ESPN Daily, hosted by Mina Kimes, Monday through Friday. She takes a look at the most interesting stories at ESPN in just 20 minutes. Listen and subscribe now to ESPN Daily, wherever you find your podcast. I love doing it every single day. Mina, she brings the best stuff out. Excellent work from our producer, Taylor Schwenk, who fired up a smoker this past weekend when it's 30 degrees in Connecticut. I appreciate that, Taylor. You're not going to let the Mother Nature and the elements affect you from enjoying a good lunch. If you enjoyed this podcast and you want more, all you have to do is subscribe to the College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. And, of course, remember, rate and review wherever you get your podcasts. We appreciate it. By the way, if you have a question and you want to hear it on the podcast for Herbie, Pollock, myself, or any of our guests, tweet using the hashtag CFBPod. Best ones will make the podcast. Enjoy the weekend.